Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 797 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and today we're going to be continuing the chronology with Bloodshot number one from 2012. This is the Dwayne Swierczynski written title with art by Manuel Garcia and Arturo Lozzi. Inks are by Stefano Guidiano. We have colors by Ian Hannon and letters by Rob Steen. So, as I said, this is the 2012 series that kind of reintroduced Bloodshot to a new generation of comic readers. He's no longer Angelo Mortali, former hitman for the mob, who's searching for his identity and looking to get revenge on those who murdered him, basically. So, this series does take a few of the ideas from that original series in terms of Bloodshot wakes up and he doesn't know who he is. That's the main kind of common thread that runs through both the original Bloodshot title as well as this one. But this one's a little more tech-based, a little more militaristic, much more involves Project Rising Spirit. It involves military. As I said, the mystery of who Bloodshot is, he's a mystery to himself, is still very much there, but this is a different take. He's really tied in more closely. Bloodshot as a character and his origin is tied in much more closely to the other characters in the Valiant universe, even tying him into Harbinger with PRS and Harada conglomerates, you know, always at war. And now they're at the point where they are competing to find new psyots, new people who have the ability to have these incredible powers. For those not familiar, psyots in the Valiant universe are basically what mutants are to the Marvel universe. So Bloodshot's mission in this version is really to work for Project Rising Spirit and to go out and find these psyots before Toyo Harada and his organization can. So that's kind of his purpose. And in order to do that, Project Rising Spirit has had this program in place for a long time, the Bloodshot program, where they're infusing soldiers throughout history with not always nanites, but with enhancements and turning them into basically the peak of what is possible as a human being. So that's what Bloodshot is, you know, with the technology of the 2000s. He's much more advanced than he's ever been. He has billions and billions of these nanites coursing through his bloodstream. They enhance his strength, his reflexes. They allow him to recover from catastrophic injuries, regrow limbs. You know, as long as he has protein, as long as the nanites have the building blocks of matter that they need on a subatomic level, they can change his appearance. They can, as I said, rebuild limbs. There's really almost no limit to what these nanites are capable of. They also allow him to interface with electromagnetic fields, right? So he's able to communicate, you know, like as if he had a walkie-talkie or a cell phone. He's able to, you know, hack into computers. He's able to remotely control some electronic devices. So he's really a very, very powerful individual, but again, doesn't know who he is. And in this series, as we'll see, as it starts to take off, that becomes a driving force, him wanting to know who he is. Because you'll see when I do the synopsis here, he's got so many false memories implanted. He's at the point where he doesn't know what's real and what's not. Could any of these identities be his real identity, or is he someone else completely? So the issue starts off, first of all, there's an incredible cover, which if you are a fan of Valiant, if you've been following Bloodshot for any period of time, you've probably seen this cover because it's completely iconic. It's been put on t-shirts, it's been put on water bottles, and it's really an amazing, amazing image. So as we turn to the first page, there's an advanced nanite capability overview. It gives basic information, medical applications, military applications, and then possible dangers, which is pretty interesting, like what the possible consequences are long-term to having nanites. And when I read those, you know, it'd been a long time since I pulled this out. But when I read those, it made me wonder if some of these potential dangers were Sierzynski and Valiant planting the seeds for possible storylines coming up down the line that they just never got a chance to get to. They mention that it's possible for a hostile force to capture Bloodshot and then hack his nanites and reprogram him. They also mentioned that there's a possibility for the nanites to start replicating uncontrollably and what effect that might have on Bloodshot. And then finally, this might be the one that had the most potential for an interesting storyline. It says, the aforementioned potential for nanites to self-replicate is also the basis for the apocalyptic gray goo theory. And that's the idea that these nanites would just continue replicating and replicating and replicating to the point where it becomes this, you know, gray goo that then threatens the Earth. And now that I say that, I'm starting to recall that there was a story where that was touched on a little bit. Now that I think about it. So again, seeds being planted and then they pay off later. But I mean, that really, you know, that idea of the gray goo is really a story that could have been like a line-wide event. So anyway, let's go ahead and dive into the issue. It starts off, we are following a predator drone that's 3 miles above sea level in Afghanistan, and the drone pilots have confirmation that this person they're looking to take out is on this truck, and they're about to power the missile on and take out this enemy of the United States, when all of a sudden they notice there's a kid standing in the road as the truck passes by. And so they decide, oh, let's give it a second till the truck clears this potential, you know, innocent person. We don't want the collateral damage. And then come to find out, the girl is aware that they are there. She literally looks up into the drone camera, raises her hands, and somehow transmits some sort of energy or power through the camera. We see all the drone equipment turn off. The drone operator is shocked by this electrical energy. Whether or not he survives, we don't know, but we do see the drone is also taken out as it is overcome by this this lightning, this energy that's coruscating over its body, and we assume that it crashes. So the scene shifts. We have a couple of guys in an office, one in a military uniform, one not. The guy in the military uniform is named Hutch, apparently, and he's telling this this civilian, apparently, Ray is his name, we need you, right? And Ray's response is, you know why I'm not going to do this anymore. Now, I want you to go buy me the porterhouse that you owe me before I beat you with a stump of your own arm. And so they have a little chit-chat, and this general, Hutch, as I said his name is telling Ray, look, I know I promised I wouldn't put you in this position. There was an accident. We were about to take out the number two guy on the president's please kill this horrible person immediately list. And somebody went to check it out, and he got captured. And, you know, I wouldn't be asking you this, but it's Apinowitz who got captured. And our embassy says they're going to chop his head off in 12 hours. And we need somebody like you, Ray, with your abilities. Apinowitz needs you. And so the scene shifts later to Ray's house, and he's telling his wife, you know, it's Apinowitz. I'd still be a prisoner of war if it wasn't for him. I've got to do this. And his wife is telling him, you know, you promised. To which Ray responds, well, and I'm keeping my promise because I'm not going into the field. This is just recon. Obviously, we, you know, right away, you know, that's a bunch of BS. He's going to do whatever it takes to rescue this guy that he feels he owes his life to. His son, John, is there as well, saying, remember, you said you'd volunteer to be in the dunk tank for my school, and please come back. And so Ray says, yes, I'll be back. I cross my heart. And soon over at Afghanistan, as Ray jumps out of the plane, we get a front view of him, and he's transformed into Bloodshot. So apparently this Ray person is Bloodshot, and he's communicating through the use of his nanites with Hutch, who apparently is his commanding officer. And as Ray jumps out of the plane saying, Hutch, you still owe me that steak, Hutch's response is, get Apinowitz out alive and I'll throw in a shrimp cocktail. So as Bloodshot starts to float down to the ground on this parachute, a missile basically shoots him out of the air, hits him, and it's an incredible scene. It's not quite a full page spread, but it's close, and we see his body is just torn apart by this missile, and he plummets to the ground like a meteor, actually. And he's not there for very long before we see some what we assume are some of the same insurgents, same bad guys that captured Apanowitz. They find him and they take his body back to base. And we see his body is laid on a table, and he's still hearing the voice of Hutch telling him, "You're no ordinary soldier, Ray. We both know that." But when you look at his body, I mean, it's burnt, it's desiccated, you know, the muscles are gone, it's nearly just a skeleton. But there's enough there for Ray to regenerate. So I always kind of wondered about this part, though. They go through great pains in this series to show that when Bloodshot regenerates himself, it takes the same amount of kind of intake of protein to replace what was lost, right? So if, in other words, if he loses an arm, he's got to ingest enough like protein or meat of some sort, the same amount of mass, the same amount of matter to be transformed back into that arm. But here he regenerates without any intake of protein. So I'm not sure. We've seen it other times where Bloodshot has lost a limb, a couple limbs actually, and he only has enough protein to basically regrow one, and the other is there, but it's sort of withered. Again, it's a cool idea, and it shows that, yeah, it's that whole idea of matter cannot be created nor destroyed. So you need the same amount. You can't just create matter out of nothing. You've got to have the intake. So again, I'm not sure if maybe they just load him up on protein before he starts a mission. You know, his belly's full of building blocks, basically, so that if something like this happens, he's able to rebuild himself quickly. So as he lays there on the table, we see his chest start to glow with that red circle that we've come to sort of identify with Bloodshot, that iconic look, and we see radiating out from that circle are all these bright glowing yellow lines as his body starts to rebuild itself, the nerves, the bone, the muscle, the sinew, all of that. And in his mind's eye, he's seen Hutch, he's seen his son, he's seen his wife, and they're telling him, "You're born for this, we're counting on you, please come home, Dad." We see Apanowitz saying, "Come and get me, brother." And then finally his wife saying, "Ray, you need to open your eyes." And so he recovers relatively quickly, considering, and he calls out to Hutch, "Hey, I'm in." And Hutch gives him the order to breach the command center as soon as possible. We think that's where they're keeping Apanowitz. So Bloodshot goes out into the hallway. He basically grabs the last guy in a line of three who's on patrol, grabs his clothes, and uses the nanite's ability to, for a very short period of time, rearrange Bloodshot's features so that he resembles this guy that he just took out. So as he heads to the command center, there's a room full of, you know, 20 guys, if not more, Hutch telling Bloodshot that they don't need any survivors. And Bloodshot says, "I have no problem with that," and he starts to take them out very quickly. When he goes to open the blast door that supposedly leads to the command center where Apanowitz is supposed to be being held, when he opens the door, instead of finding Apanowitz, he sees his son. And his son says, "Hi, Daddy, we've been waiting for you." And Bloodshot's like, "Wait, what? Johnny, what are you doing here?" And Hutch is surprised as well, saying, "How on earth?" And they're trying to explain to him, "That's not your son, Ray. It's a trick. Do you hear me? Respond." And as this projection, this holographic projection of his son, or who he believes to be his son, Johnny, fades away, saying, "You're going to die, Daddy." Bloodshot is taken out again, shot in the head by forces unknown at this point. On the next page, we see Bloodshot waking up. There are a lot of scientists around. He's hooked up through his head to a bunch of wires. He's secured in a chair. And the person that apparently runs this lab is saying, "Wow, he woke up so fast. He's healing much faster these days. Project Rising Spirit must have given him some new upgrades recently. He just cost us a lot of good men." And then this man asks how they are on the download. And he's told that they're at 85%. So Bloodshot obviously wants to know who this guy is. And this man responds, "Hey, take it easy. Everything's going to be okay. I'm Mr. Kuratich. You probably don't remember me, but I can't hold that against you." How's the family? And Bloodshot wants to know, where's my son? You touch my family, I'll tear you apart. And this man, Kurtich, responds, but which family would that be? Is it Lisa and the twins? Is it Ashley and young John? Is it Rose and the toddler? Were you rescuing your old friend Calkins again, or was it poor old Apanowitz this time? And Bloodshot's like, wait a second, who are you? How do you know all this stuff about me? And Kurtich says, you know, I'll get to that in a minute. Just hang in there. And then he speaks directly to Bloodshot, but he's not speaking to Bloodshot, he's speaking through Bloodshot. And he says, I'm speaking to Project Bloodshot's current minder and the staff of Project Rising Spirit. I want you to let Auric know that we're watching. Because Lord knows we handled enough missions together, and I'm here to tell you the game's over. The people that you're hunting, those psyots, they're going to rise up soon. And now that we've downloaded all of this data, these secret missions of Bloodshot, we're going to expose all this innocent blood you've spilled all around the world trying to capture these psyots. Meanwhile, back at Project Rising Spirit, the handlers of Bloodshot are telling Auric that Bloodshot's being hacked, the readings are off the charts. Auric wants to scramble the choppers and send them out, track Bloodshot down. And Kurtich then gathers his team and says, okay, Auric's probably soiling his trousers right now. The download's finished, so let's show this man what his masters did to him. And at this point is really when this story of this version of Bloodshot starts. Because with a push of a button, Kurtich kind of opens up Bloodshot's mind. He says, cheer up, Bloodshot. I'm about to set you free. And then he explains what Project Rising Spirit has been doing all this time. He says that Project Rising Spirit has filled his head with dozens of fictional wives and children and friends, tailor-made to every possible scenario, and that they basically turned his brain into a TV. And his life becomes whatever channel he's watching. And whenever there's a different situation that arises and they need to point Bloodshot in a different direction, in a different way, they just change the channel. And all of a sudden, Bloodshot believes he's this new person. He's this different person with different friends and different family. And it's always about family, which I think is at the core of Bloodshot as a character. And it's something that's been explored, and it's something I hope that they'll explore in the movie. It's kind of the driving force behind him. And when I think about family, and I think about the Bloodshot movie, and I think about Vin Diesel, I think about that movie, Man Apart. I think there are a lot of things in that movie, particularly the motivation for Vin Diesel's character, which remind me of Bloodshot. So I think that could work in terms of the movie. But basically, what I'm getting at is that Bloodshot at his core, whoever he was originally, whether that's Ray Garrison or somebody else, obviously had... He put a great deal of value on the concept of family and loved ones, because that is always what PRS has leveraged in order to get him to do their dirty work. Kurtich even says here, you'll kill anyone PRS points you at if it means protecting the ones you love. And he says, I should know. I created half of them myself. And on that page where Kurtich said that is, it's a great montage piece of Bloodshot in the middle, gritting his teeth, clearly angry. And all around him, we see these different photographs, different memories of Ray Garrison or Bloodshot with all these different friends, all these different family, different soldiers that he fought with, different families and children. And so, obviously, this is a big shock to Bloodshot. And he's telling Kurtich, no, these people are real. Wait, what did you do to me? What did you do to my head? And he surges up out of the seat, breaks through his restraints, and starts running away. And one of the scientists says, we need to stop him. And Kurtich says, no, we have what we came for. Let him go. And soon Bloodshot is wandering the desert in Afghanistan. So basically what this comes down to is this entire mission that PRS thought they were undertaking, it was all a setup by Kurtich and his men, and we'll find out who Kurtich is working for later, but it was all a setup to get Bloodshot there to capture him, to basically let the genie out of the bottle, and at the same time download all this information that Bloodshot had in his head as it pertains to Project Rising Spirit. So once Bloodshot is out in the desert, PRS is able to communicate with him once again. They're trying to convince him that it was all just some mind op. Don't listen to anything they're saying. And Bloodshot's saying, but I feel like I'm losing my mind. All those faces, they feel so real. And they're trying to convince Bloodshot, no, they dosed you with something. They're just messing with your head. And an extraction team is en route. You should be able to see them any moment. And so sure enough, a chopper arrives quickly. And the problem is when they get out, they say, we have a visual on target. And Bloodshot's like, wait, why are they calling me a target? I thought this was an extraction. And he's calling out for Hutch. And the people at Project Rising Spirit are trying to keep Bloodshot calm, saying, take it easy, buddy. They're here to take you home. But meanwhile, as soon as the guys get out of the chopper, they say, fire at will. And they basically blast Bloodshot to pieces once again, because once he's been damaged to that point, he kind of has to go into hibernation, you know, for his body to repair itself. And it's a way for him to be captured. So they soon call in saying target neutralized. Back at Project Rising Spirit, Oryk is telling his team that Kuratich caught them by surprise, and he wants Kuratich put in the ground. But first they need to know exactly what was downloaded from Bloodshot's brain, and then wipe his brain clean and give him another memory cap. And he asks his team, well, that'll work, right? And they say, sure, why not? We've done it hundreds of times before. So I remember reading this for the first time back in 2012 and immediately being reminded of the Incredible Hulk TV show. And that, part of that might have been because I didn't read the first issue until I think the third issue had come out, or fourth issue. So I read them all in one big chunk. But you get a little bit of sense of it here, like, even though Bloodshot technically is a part of the Project Rising Spirit team, he's not really aligned with them, if you know what I mean. He's really a man on his own. And as we'll see, as he tries to escape the clutches of Project Rising Spirit, when he's out on a run, he's kind of a one man on his own kind of situation, where there's all these different factions that are trying to find him, that are trying to hunt him down, and he's just trying to discover who he is, and he's just a guy alone on the run. But he can't help but feel for people who are in bad situations and want to help them when he can. So again, much like the Incredible Hulk TV show, you know, David Banner out on the road, looking for answers, looking for a cure, while at the same time constantly coming across people who need his help. And just because of the nature of him and who he is as a person, he can't help but lend a hand, lend aid. That's just kind of the same thing about Bloodshot. The overall tone and feel I got from the story when it first started, I wish that had lasted longer, but due to some other events and things that Value wanted to do, I think the story moved on from that sort of feel a little bit sooner than I would have liked. But again, maybe it's just, you know, nostalgia on my part, loving that old TV show, liking that this book very much reminded me of it in terms of the feel of the story, and Bloodshot out on his own, so to speak. So as far as this particular issue, Dunk Tank, as it's called, a reference to Ray and his false memories, where Johnny at one point says, you know, you need to come home quick, Dad, from this mission, because remember, I volunteered you to be in the dunk tank at my school carnival. So that's kind of where that title comes from. But really, it's nonstop action right from the beginning. And it's not that we don't get any story, but in terms of explanation or origin or understanding or starting at the beginning, that needle is much lower than the needle that measures how much action we get in the issue. And I think it's okay. I think it works like that, because Bloodshot is an action-oriented character, and you really want to make sure you're putting enough action in a Bloodshot book so that returning fans of the character get what they expect, and that is a lot of action. Plus, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, the one thing, or the thing that this Bloodshot has most in common with previous versions of Bloodshot, is the fact that he doesn't know who he is, and he's had memories implanted, and his mind has been wiped, and he's searching for answers. And we start to see the beginning of the search for that journey here when Kuratich and his men capture him, and basically, to put it in Kuratich's terms, they've set Bloodshot free, right? They've given him his independence. They've shown him that, hey, you've been manipulated all this time. And what we'll come to see and learn as we cover subsequent issues is that genie can't be put back in the bottle no matter how hard Project Rising Spirit tries. They're not able to erase this knowledge from Bloodshot's head that he is not all these different identities that Project Rising Spirit has created for him over the years. They're no longer able to change the channel and reset and then point Bloodshot where he needs to go. So again, I think the characterization is okay. We don't really get enough of anybody really on panel long enough to really get a full fleshed out kind of feel for who they are. It's bits and pieces here and there. Because again, the majority of the issue is given over to action. I think it works, but again, I'm somebody that was coming into this with a lot of prior knowledge of Bloodshot. So for me, I thought it was fine. I did have some questions, but also, as I mentioned, as soon as I finished reading this, I immediately had issue two to go and pick up and read. So, you know, now that all this stuff is out, the best way to read it is either to buy, you know, a big chunk of issues and read them all back to back, or you buy the first trade. In fact, if you're at a show, a comic convention, pop culture convention, whatever you want to call it, where Valiant is exhibiting, all their first volume ones are only $9.99, and they have that convention deal that they've run since the beginning of the company's return. That's the best deal I've ever seen a publisher run. You basically buy three trades and you get two free. And what I mean by that is, again, all their volume one trades are $9.99, but they have this deal at a show where if you buy three, you get two free. So you basically get five trades for $30. So that works out to $6 a trade. I mean, a single issue for a comic these days, you know, a lot of Marvel ones are $4.99, but most of them are $3.99, so $4. So for $2 more, you get five or six issues worth of content. So it's a hell of a deal, and I highly encourage people, whenever they're at a show, to go and take advantage of that, because there's no better deal in comics. And again, you can pick up the first volume of Bloodshot, and you'll read this issue, and you'll immediately dive into the next, and you'll get, you know, a characterization, and the story will flow really well, because again, that's how I read it. I think, as I said, the first three or four issues all in one sitting. So I didn't mind that there wasn't as much characterization as there maybe could have been in a first issue. I feel like you get the pertinent details, you get enough to understand what's going on, and the factions are sort of set up against each other. It's PRS versus Kuratich and his guys, with Bloodshot sort of caught in the middle. And again, you get that feeling right away that Bloodshot's kind of on his own and is being manipulated, and you start to feel for him right away and empathize with the character. Who Kuratich works for is unclear at this point, but we find that out in short order. And then Project Rising Spirit just comes across as this, you know, highly advanced, technologically advanced company or corporation or shadowy cabal that doesn't have the best interests of either Bloodshot or just the general public at heart. And Auric, we come to see as a very malevolent figure as the story rolls on. So I was immediately hooked right from the beginning. The other thing that's absolutely incredible and helps to pull you in when we're talking about Bloodshot is the art from Manuel Garcia and Arturo Lozzi. And they have a very distinct styles. They're very different. And Valiant really took advantage of that. Whenever we see Arturo Lozzi, his art is very smooth. It looks very like digitally painted, almost photorealistic to a fault. And whenever Bloodshot is thinking about a false memory, like that whole scene where he's in the office with Hutch, that's all Lozzi, right? And again, it looks very realistic, just the tone and the feel of it, the textures. Same thing with that cover that I was talking about that's so iconic. And so it very much, you're able to distinguish. Same thing with when Ray goes and talks to Ashley and his son Johnny and says, hey, it's Apinowitz and I've got to go. It's that very smooth, clean, photorealistic style that indicates that these are, what we come to learn, are false memories. This is a false narrative running through Bloodshot's head. It's not really happening. As opposed to when Manuel Garcia does the art, and this is what's happening in the real world. And very visceral in terms of Bloodshot getting blown up like three different times in this issue, where he just gets absolutely obliterated by some different gunfire or missiles or whatever it is. This is not for the faint of heart. It's not a children's comic. There's a lot of blood, there's a lot of guts, and there's a lot of action. So got to hand it to Manuel Garcia for giving us great looking action, you know, awesome explosions. It really shows us what Bloodshot is capable of. But in going back and rereading this right now, the one thing I will say is, as powerful as Bloodshot is or seems to be in here, he does seem to be a little bit fragile, right? Like anytime somebody wants to capture him, all they have to do is like fire tons of weapons at him, like all at once, and basically, you know, blow him. Like there's one scene here when the guys come out of the helicopter and open fire on Bloodshot. They basically blast both arms from his body. They blow big holes in his legs. So it again, very visceral, very brutal, but it almost makes it seem like it's too easy to capture Bloodshot. I mean, Bloodshot's captured like three different times in the first issue, and it makes it seem like, well, he's not as powerful or as formidable as he should be. Basically, it's just a matter of inflicting enough damage so that his body shuts down so his nanites can repair. That sort of changes over time. So I don't know if it just, okay, let's make this decision because it suits the story we need to tell, or if it's just a little bit, you know, sloppy in terms of sort of how much punishment can Bloodshot handle? Because it seems to me later on in the Valiant Universe, he's able to handle situations like this where he's being shot at by, you know, tens of people with all different manner of weapons, and he's able to sort of endure that without his body shutting down. But maybe it's just the fact that these guys were prepared. Every time Bloodshot was taken out in here, it was with forethought. It was with whoever was doing the taking out knowing what they needed to do. I mean, the first one's a missile, right? Like, that's going to take Bloodshot out every time. He's going to have to shut down. It's going to take him a while to recover. So you can kind of throw that one out. The second one, when Johnny, the hologram of Johnny, disappears, they shoot Bloodshot through the head several times. Again, you know, they were prepared. Bloodshot wasn't. He was kind of in a state of shock when he opened that door and the hologram of Johnny was there. You know, they shot him in the head several times. Again, it's probably going to take him out. He's going to need time to recover. And the last one, I guess, to play devil's advocate, maybe they were using 50 cal machine guns. They certainly were ready. And again, Bloodshot wasn't. He was taken by surprise because he was told by PRS that this was the extraction team coming to rescue him. The guys get out. They've got all their weapons drawn and ready. And again, maybe they were just really powerful guns, as opposed to just like M16 rifles or what have you. So they inflicted more damage and they were able to take Bloodshot out easier than we've seen other times later in the series and subsequently in Bloodshot Salvation and Bloodshot Reborn. He just wasn't ready. So maybe that's what it comes down to, just inflicting that much damage that quickly when Bloodshot, you know, wasn't prepared to dodge some of the bullets, return fire, just get out of the line of fire, so to speak. I mean, again, plain devil's advocate, but it's just something I noticed when I did I mean, I've read this issue several times. I've never noticed it before, but for whatever reason, I noticed it this time. I was like, man, he really gets taken out three times and with relative ease. But again, the missile's like, yeah, of course. Any Bloodshot gets hit by a, you know, surface-to-air missile, yeah, he's going to be taken out for sure. And it's actually impressive that he recovers from that relatively quickly. So again, I love the issue. I love the run. I love the feel that the series had when it first started. And I wouldn't mind. I mean, Tim Seeley is going to be taking it over here toward the end of 2019 with a new Bloodshot series after Bloodshot Project Rising Spirit ends. Looking forward to that, hoping that Seeley can maybe bring some of that feel into Bloodshot. I've read the Free Comic Book Day issue already. I wouldn't say it has that feel. It has a different feel. It has a very popcorn, big summer blockbuster movie kind of feel with a lot of action. And it seems like we're going to get introduced to some new villains, which is cool. I think Bloodshot needs some villains added to his lineup of rogues gallery, so to speak. But I wouldn't mind, as I said, if at some point we got back to that Bloodshot on his own being pursued by some people. And he does seem to be on his own. And he is being pursued to some extent, but it's not the same feel. But again, I've only read the Free Comic Book Day issues. So just getting back to that, just because I think it works so well for the character, adding a little bit of melancholy to who he is. I think that Jeff Lemire did that in Bloodshot Reborn quite a bit. Salvation less so. That was sort of building him back up. The Reborn was tearing him down. The Salvation was building him back up. I have seen that Seeley said that he's not going to go first person. He doesn't like writing in first person. He wants us to understand who Bloodshot is through action, through his actions and through the choices he makes, rather than through us getting insight into his thoughts. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The fact that Brett Booth is handling the art certainly makes it immediately feel like it will be a big action-packed, really kinetic, fast-paced sort of story and comic. And I guess we'll have to wait and see if that proves to be the case. So highly encourage you, as I said, to pick up the first volume of Bloodshot if you haven't read it. It's a really quality story and one of my favorite titles. I think, you know, as much as Bloodshot is my favorite Valiant character, I think Harbinger has to get the nod for the title that was the most high quality and the best story from start to finish for the first volume by Joshua Dysart and various artists, Kari Evans and Clayton Crane did some issues, Barry Kitson. Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. But Bloodshot is no second fiddle. It's also very, very good. It's just a different type of story. And a lot of questions were asked and we didn't always get the answers that we were looking for or maybe that we wanted, but I feel like it was a very solid narrative and the action was always there at the forefront. And so I would say it's probably in terms of quality, I don't know, it's tough because Exo Man of War was also extremely good. It just had a different scope. So it's hard to say. Definitely Harbinger. And I'll give the nod to Bloodshot for the second best of the returning properties for the first volume, only because I love Bloodshot as a character more than I do Exo Man of War. So as much as I love Robert Venditti, he's a friend and he's been my writer of the year before on the Comic Source Awards, and it's not his fault whatsoever. It's purely based on preference of character. I'll give Bloodshot the second slot behind Harbinger as the best Valiant series when they relaunched, and I'll have to put Exo third. But yeah, this is great stuff. And if you're interested in the Bloodshot movie, it's never too early to start reading this these Bloodshot stories and understand more about the character. That I think that will allow you to get more out of the movie when you go in and check it out. I haven't been able to see the movie yet, but I've talked to some people who saw a test screening, people who are big Valiant fans and whose opinions I trust when it comes to Valiant properties. And to quote them, they said the movie was very good, not great. So again, this was a test screening. There's still more post-production to be done, special effects and all that, and the things can still be tweaked. So hopefully by the time it hits theaters, it does cross that mark from very good to great. So obviously I'll be going to see it when it comes out. I'm excited to check it out. I'm excited to cover more issues of the Bloodshot first volume on the Valiant Chronology that we do here a lot of times on Valiant Sunday. So stay tuned for that. Next week, I think we're going to cover a preview of the Free Comic Book Day issue. And we're going to talk about Livewire number 5. And then probably the following week, we'll return to the Bloodshot Chronology or Bloodshot Reading Order with issue number 2. So make sure you're here for that.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.